Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help. You save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
Wait a minute, what am I doing? Two men in a one. Two friends from film school, one who graduated, one who did, and they decided to make a podcast. Okay, this has never been done before, right? Okay. This is Matthew and Harrison's Two Men in a Movie. It's not what it sounds like.
And that's why we're a perfect team. We're constantly shielding each other.
Does that mean I should start drinking again?
No, it should not. Eventually, we'll have to do taxes for the shows, and I'm not doing it. Welcome to the Two Men in a Movie podcast, where each week, two men watch a movie that one of them has seen and the other hasn't. Changing the intro up here a bit. It's flit out better. We like to, you might even say I'm improving it a bit, which will be thematic for the show's episode. That's a secret tool that's going to come up later. I'm Matthew Olenchek, joined as always by my wonderful work husband / cover for being an alcoholic, Harrison Poole. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing all right. How you doing, hon?
I'm doing okay. I'm doing great. I got some lawn furniture. Had to watch this movie, so I'm not doing terrible, but...
I thought you were going to either like or dislike it more and not just like, I have negative opinions, but also mostly neutral.
Yeah, like it's just because I think so much of what would have been negative, just there's so much of it, it just becomes neutral. Like I just find this entire group of people incredible, cringy and awful. But since they're always on screen, I got used to it. Like, I think if I only watched 20 minutes of this movie, I would be a lot more critical towards it. But since I watched the entire movie, much like a person stranded on an island, I got used to the struggle, and it doesn't register as much. It's like when you're in an abusive relationship for a while, and the everyday abuse starts blending in the background, and you only remember the big abusive parts, because the regular abuse is every day. So at the end of this, all the cringiness, that was just the life I was living at that point. That's the moment I was existing in. And it's just not as negative. I just got used to it. I was inoculated.
That's fair. The movie this week I picked was Mike Birbiglia's 2016 film, Don't Think Twice, which I was not surprised. I know the original premise was you haven't seen that. What the hell? I wasn't surprised you haven't seen that, but I just think more people should see this movie. And I wanted to, specifically pick a movie that I knew we were going to have, differing opinions on, but a common ground.
This is a movie I would never go and see in theaters. This is a movie that would pop up. It did. I was live in 2016. This movie popped up. I probably heard of it, so that doesn't sound interesting at all. You'd have to drag me there. Someone would have to be in a 2-year relationship to get me to probably see this movie. I'd have to really be into a person if they're let's go see this movie as a date. And that would be the only situation I would see it. Maybe if a gun to my head, but we're talking realistic here. I'd catch the gun, move it out of the way. Am I watching the improv movie? Ha! Pow! Disarm them.
I didn't see this movie in theaters because I didn't know anywhere that was showing it, but I bought the DVD pretty soon after it came out, and I've probably seen this movie, well, I've seen it twice this week, but I've probably seen this movie half a dozen times in my life. I really like it. To me, it's a gentleman's six.
I think this could be a truly good movie if someone with my opinions was writing it. You could do a lot with just, you're not supposed... If you were to, take the viewpoint as the director of you're supposed to hate these people, it would be one of the best movies of all time. But that's not the point of the movie, and that's where it struggles.
That's fair. You are supposed to be... you're supposed to be sympathetic with them, and I think it succeeds at that. But I also... Yeah, I don't find... Other than Bill... Oh my, I forget her, Kate Micucci, Data, but I forget the actual character's name. But Chris Gethard's Bill and Kate Micucci and Gillian Anderson, I actually like really like those three performances and really like those three characters.
I always struggle to like Kate because I like her.
Uh-huh.
But she looks like someone who'd be so unlikable. She looks like someone who'd just be insufferable. And she's not. She's like good in everything she does. But she looks like somebody like carries like a clown horn in their backpack because it's a fun, quirky thing to do. This is my own personal issue. It has nothing to do with her performance. Performance is great. And just with Kate Micucci, I'm always like, my initial asshole brain's like, you hate this person. And but no, she's fine.
Fun fact. Everyone except she was one of two people. Her and Gillian Anderson are the only two people in this main cast in the commune who had never done improv before. And I would have bet most of the money in my bank account right now that she would have done improv before this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. No, she seems the type.
Like, she has the face and the attitude and the general tone of like someone who was deep in the New York improv scene.
And it's like 50-50 if it's like I said, carrying clown horn or actually good. I knew someone that used to carry a clown horn in their backpack because it made them quirky.
Jesus Christ.
I've seen the true horrors of this world.
So this is a movie about an improv group of six members called the Commune.
Which I'm iffy on that name.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm not sure. Is that like, am I even like, wow, you call yourselves the Commune? I'm not sure it's a good improv group name. Commune?
What about it do you not like?
That's the hard thing. I don't dislike it. I just think there's a better name there. I don't think it's a strong enough name for an improv group. Usually they're like named after a place or something, you know?
Sure. The Commune is six members, and it's Mike Birbiglia, the writer-director of this movie, who plays Miles, who's like the founder and like the head teacher of Improv for America, is the name of like the company or the theater.
And I'll give my ratings of these people as we move on. Don't like this guy.
You don't like Miles?
I don't like Miles.
Okay, specifically, what don't you like?
He's a 36-year-old. He's fucking 20-year-olds.
Yeah, I agreed.
And like, take that, okay? You're picturing that in your memory, in your mind, your mind space, wah wah wah,
uh-huh.
And then put improv artist around it, and just that combination of things, like the person that has those two traits, awful.
A very sad human being.
Very sad human being who doesn't think he's sad.
Right. We later find, like, strives for better, becomes better.
Yeah,
thank God.
I might hang out with him after the event. If I met him after the events of this movie,
yeah,
I never met him before, I'd probably like the guy. But if I'd ever know, ever at like any point known him as he was in this movie,
yeah,
like just I didn't get on not SNL, and that's like all he talks about. I'd be like, I hate this guy.
Yeah, that's fair. Tammy Sager plays, I forget her character name off the top of my head, but she plays the rich girl.
Yeah, would not hang out with her. She seems insufferable.
Yeah, she comes from, she's unemployed, comes from a very wealthy family, and has like been handed everything in life, but also because of that feels insecure, like that she's earned anything, but also like she has the safety net that everyone else in the group really doesn't.
Which I hate. Like, look, I'm a child of privilege. I gleefully accept everything given to me and don't feel bad about it.
That's fair. No, yeah. That's fair.
I'm upfront about it. If I've gotten something that has made me privileged, or if something in my life has come about because I'm privileged, I'm like, yeah, it's because I'm privileged. Some people don't have that. It sucks. I probably don't deserve this, but that's my life. And just like it feels like a performative sense of self-pity. So I'm gonna like say that.
Okay.
Not the exact words I'm looking for. But it's someone who's like, I'm so... It's like in the therapy scene where he's like, rich people, yeah, it's hard to be rich. Like, yeah, it's like, oh, it's so hard to be a person of privilege. No, it's not. It's not hard to have privilege at all. other people have actual fucking problems, and you're like, it's hard to be privileged. No, it's not. It's easy. It's so fucking easy. Or it wouldn't be privileged. Also, that character is 100% someone who says weed isn't addictive.
Oh, 1,000%.
Weed isn't addictive. Oh, I haven't smoked a day. I'm having a freak out. Weed isn't addictive. It's not physically addictive, but it's mentally addictive.
Yeah, it's not like cocaine where your body like literally craves it, but like
it creates dependency.
Yeah, if you've smoked every day for a decade and you get fucking cranky when you don't smoke, you're fucking addicted to it. Aforementioned Chris Gethard plays Bill, who's
an all right guy, but sad.
Yes.
But not in the way that the 36-year-old who fucks 20. He has depression, sad.
Yeah.
Versus I am just a sad example of a human being. I would hang out with this guy. I think he'd be fun to hang out with.
Yeah.
Had the better improv. I think generally one of the funnier members of the entire group. Later in the fake funeral scene, he says it's only a headshot, actually a good improv. He's both one of the better improvers of the entire group.
Yes.
And he seems to be the most, like, normal guy. He's just like, I could go out and do something with this guy and it wouldn't be like, I'm gonna talk about, well, I'm privileged, I didn't get an SNL. We could just have like an actual conversation about life.
Yeah. Fun fact, actually he used to teach improv classes in real life at UCB. So I think he hadn't done improv for a couple years at this point because he was doing stand-up. He was actually performing his one-man show Career Suicide at the time. But I don't think he'd done improv for a couple years at this point, but it was like over a decade of his life that was very dedicated to it.
Tolerable improv person. That's a person who should be doing improv and will succeed at improv.
Mm-hmm. And also a very normal, I guess, believable relationship with like their parent, where it's like, it's not at all antagonistic, where he even says in the funeral was like, I lived a very different kind of lifestyle and my dad didn't understand it, but he always respected it.
Yeah. Cause spoilers, his dad dies. And like, again, this is what really sold me on the characters. They're all in the car and they're all like doing improv about his dad dying. And he's like, that's not appropriate. And I'm like, okay, this guy is cool. Like, he hasn't made improv his entire fucking personality. Right. That's what it is. He hasn't made improv his entire fucking personality. It might be the most important thing to him.
Yes.
But it's not him as a person.
Yes.
He doesn't feel... Because what I truly dislike about a lot of improv people is that they're like, that's me. Everything I do is improv.
No, I agree. We'll get to the scene later because it's my favorite scene in the movie.
There's bits of Bill. Yeah. There's bits of Bill. That's the founder. 36-year-old?
Miles is the...
Miles.
The founder.
There's bits where, like, if he was like that all the time, he'd be retellable. Because he's, like, he makes a lot of funny jokes throughout the thing.
Mm-hmm.
But he's, like, not everything has to turn into an improv bit. And there's a difference between, like, bits people do to be funny and improv bits. And in this movie, we see so many times the only way they're able to be funny is trying to turn everything into an improv bit.
Sure. Okay, I follow that.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bill, I think, has the, I guess, realistic, but the most, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Sane, I guess, healthy. Yeah. He has the healthiest view of this, and we'll get to the scene later, but when he's like, I hate my job, but I have the secret superpower, you can tell that, like, it's the thing he loves the most in the world, but it's not, like, the thing he has dedicated his entire existence to.
And it hasn't become him.
Mm-hmm. We also have the aforementioned Kate McCucci. I forget her character's
Data
name.
Data is what they call her.
Yeah, they call her Data because Star Trek. No, I would totally hang out with Kate. Actually, I've hung out with so many people like Kate. Both the I'm terrified to do the big project that I've been dedicating the last decade of my life to. But also, like, the very, like, neuroses-driven.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's something, like, I don't know, like, in my own output, I've never been terrified to, like, put out a project. But that is because I just pump things out like they're trash. Like, my artistic process is, I'm making the thing, it goes out.
That's fair.
You gotta, and I think it's a good example for anybody, and they mentioned it in their little rules of improv. Just don't fucking get in your head about it.
Yeah, don't think.
Just make and put it out.
My thesis with art is I want to be, this is going to sound disrespectful, but I don't mean it. I actually mean it very respectfully. I want to be like what Kevin Smith was for me, which is, oh, this thing counts. Like, if this counts as a thing, then I can fucking do this.
No, I get it, because Kevin Smith is, he's making it because he likes to make it, and then he puts it out. There's not that veneer of, like, this is art.
Right. Clerks specifically, and Mallrat, like, the first few films.
Yeah, that's just a man who likes to make films, who made films and put them out.
Yes, Clerks very much feels like a fucking 23-year-old who desperately wanted to make a film with friends, and he got so lucky.
Yeah, not everything has to be this high, like, now this is cinema. Yeah. I've made cinema, this is cinema.
But also, like, what I love about Kevin Smith is as you, like, watch his progression, and I hope that we get to do this too, but as you, like, watch his career progress, you can, like, see him get better. But when you start at the beginning, it's like, oh, this counts. And then, like, as he keeps going, so you get the idea of, like, oh, if I keep doing this thing, I'm also going to continue to get better. Yeah. I've always been very hesitant to, I'll talk about this specifically. I've always been very hesitant to record podcasts, because I'm terrified of being bad at things.
It is truly, we're going to get a bit behind the shows here. Just the good, like, duo act we got going on, which is how the two of us approach this, where you are terrified of this being bad and you tried everything. We're moving away from having notes for the sessions. Because we had extensive notes. Because Harrison's like, I want to get this exactly right. Where I had just gotten out of the shower before you got here. I like ate breakfast while we were watching the movie, and I'm laying on a couch and I'm not thinking about a goddamn thing I'm saying. I put absolutely no thought into this except for like, I'm going to state my opinion on things, and if people like it, people like it.
I think my end goal for like how I want to view my art is I want to be the definitive like definition of whether I think something is good or not. But also like we make art publicly. And yeah. So like I obviously want people to like it, but I also don't want like it's not that I want people to dislike it. It's that if you dislike it, I'm just not for you.
Whereas with me, it's very much like this is me not going to therapy. And if you like it, I'm glad.
Yeah, no, I go to therapy. And
this is me saying, I don't need therapy. I can make a film.
Yeah. We mentioned Kate Micucci. Would you hang out with Kate? Did we mention if you would hang out with Kate Micucci?
I was 50-50 on it.
Okay.
I'd have to feel it out.
That's fair. No, I would totally hang with Kate Micucci. Gillian Anderson, Sam, is like, I want to say she's the newest member of the commune, however, has been there for years at this point.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. She has made improv her entire life, but in not an insufferable way. In that she's not trying to like... When she panics out of her SNL audition, I don't think it's because she was afraid she wouldn't get it. I think it's because like she desperately loves this thing at its purest form, and she didn't want to be successful in a diluted form of it.
Yeah, it might be 50-50 if it goes beyond a fling. I could see being more maybe now that you've described it that way.
Honestly, I hope it works out.
We'll see how it goes with Florence Pugh.
And then finally we have Keegan-Michael Key's Jack, who is the most successful of the group, is also the most cutthroat of the group, and the most willing to sell everyone out. With that being said, not necessarily a bad person, just like a very secretly... selfishly motivated person, in the way that, like, I don't know, everyone is selfishly motivated. That's just human nature. But I think, like, he's the most willing to sell. Well, he even does it at, like, in the show in the beginning. But he's, like, the most willing to sell his friends out so he can succeed.
Yeah, I would not hang out with him.
Me neither.
He's 100% the fucking person who's like, I can't wait to be a part of the industry. Someday I'll be a part. Where's this movie? It's in New York, isn't it? Fuck.
Yeah.
So say, like, I'm the Bill Hader of New York or something like that. Or, like, you know, the person who constantly compares themselves to, like, a successful person. They're like, I'm them, but just here at a lower level.
Sure.
Like, people in film school say, like, I'm the Steven Spielberg of this university. Yeah. And it's like, oh, man.
I don't think I
get hit by a car.
I wouldn't hang out with Jack on a regular basis, but I do think, like, he would not be a relationship that I would cut off just because I don't think he's, like, that annoying. I just think it will be a constant distance with brief moments where we're in the same room together. And it's like, oh, I'm glad you're alive situations.
If I went to a party and he was there, I'd be annoyed, but not, like, upset.
Okay. I don't know. I don't think I would be annoyed. It depends on what he was doing. Like, he has brief moments in the beginning where he's chill, and even throughout where he's, like, chill. If he was, like, not on, I feel like he'd be a lot more tolerable than constantly on.
Yeah, but he's one of those people that are constantly on because they've made their pursuit of, like, success in their field their only... Not their only goal, but their only personality trait.
Sure.
His only trait is, I'm going to be on not SNL.
I feel like if he were emotionally vulnerable, he would actually be decent to chill with. But I don't think he would allow himself to be emotionally vulnerable for extended periods of time.
No, never.
Excuse me. So that's the main cast. There's, like, a couple, we'll get to them as we get to them, but, like, there's a couple, excuse me, I'm so sorry. I drank Dr. Pepper before this.
You ate that fucking fly that's flying around.
No, by the way, Dr. Pepper, if you want to sponsor us, please
sponsor. I go through, like, two cases of, it's not just me, I just, people that come over. I am single-handedly, like, a center for Dr. Pepper consumption in this greater area.
Dude, I drink, I go through phases. Well, I constantly drink Dr. Pepper at work, but I go through phases where I buy it. When I'm on a Dr. Pepper kick, I will drink, like, 2 12-packs a week, like, a lot.
There was a point in college when I could just walk downstairs, like, to the little food area to buy it, that I was going through, like, a 12-pack every 2 days.
That's fair. Yeah. I probably go through a 12-pack every 3. So
I was drinking, like, 3, like, 6 a day.
Yeah. this movie begins with, like, a montage-y,
It opens like it's going to be, like, a nonfiction film.
Yeah.
That's telling you about the history of improv.
Yeah. I like the beginning. I like the beginning. I think it's decently done. It's a little schmaltzy, but, like,
the whole movie schmaltzy.
It gets you into the tone of the movie very quickly. We're introduced to the cast of characters in pretty rapid succession. They're playing improv games. And then Chris Gethard walks in naked, because they agreed that they were all going to wear the matching costumes, and that's probably
which
the
is
only
a flaw.
Thing, though.
Sexual harassment's not a joke.
No, I can tell you why this scene exists. Well, first off, in the original cut, it's full body.
Yeah.
They actually, like, in editing, they have just done his torso up. However, like, in the original cut of the film when they were doing test screenings, it was full body. You saw his dick. And it got to the point where enough people, audience members, were like, why are you showing us full frontal third scene in the movie?
Yeah.
Like, 3 minutes into this movie, and it's not plot driven. But that's
they've never met an improv artist,
right? Birbiglia on his podcast talks about he has that because like these people are surrounded by comedy so constantly that it's very hard to shock them. And one of the only ways that he could think for someone to like get the initial shock in the same way that the cast would have the initial shock was if he just walked in completely naked, because that's a thing that the character would do specifically to get the reaction out of his crew. I think it works torso up. Like, I think they made the correct scene,
yeah.
The decision to cut his dick out of the movie.
But although they'll keep the dick in and doing the alternate cut I proposed earlier, which is that the director fucking hates these people. That's the start of a great movie. Like, if I think this movie could be fantastic if the director hated these people, hated these characters. And in that movie, the full nudity would be required.
Sure. Yeah, Birbiglia definitely doesn't hate these characters. I also don't hate these characters in the same way you do. I find most of them a tad insufferable. I do understand that, and I agree with that. I find
it's when they become a group of insufferable people. That's when it's the worst.
1,000%. I find them sympathetic, but like mostly I find them. I find very specific care. I find Bill, Data, and Sam entirely sympathetic for the entire runtime, and then everyone else has moments of like sympathy. I'm actually sympathetic to Miles the entire runtime, while also acknowledging that he's a creep. But like,
yeah, he's a 36-year-old man sleeping with his improv students.
Yeah, is it sympathy or empathy when like you would never be in that situation, but you can like.
Empathy is being able to feel it.
Okay.
And sympathy is like being able to like understand it.
Okay. Oh, I can understand how sad this person is. I can't understand the action this person takes, but I can understand like.
Well, I understand how sad he is, but it's like in a way of like, this is a sad example of a man.
Yeah.
He's a pitiful individual.
That's, yes, it's less sympathy. It's sympathy in specific sections, and then pity for a lot of it. I don't know. I like this cast. I think everyone does a very good job.
Oh yeah, no, like all the performers are doing a great job and doing a great job with their characters. Me not liking them is not because they've done anything or the characters are badly written. Everything's like pretty well done. I just deeply hate these kind of people. This is entirely personal. This is not a critique on the movie. It's just I truly hate the people that are in this. Like, if the people that exist outside of the movie who are like this, I despise them.
I mostly agree, even though I hang out with a few of them. Unfortunately, I hang out with more than my fair share of improv people. Most of them are pretty chill. Some of them are a lot. They're never going to listen to this. I'm still not going to name names, but like, they don't need to know what I think about.
Like, I exist as a person who is chronically unable to be emotionally available and mostly just makes jokes. And I will never reach the level of being insufferable as like an improv person. Like we're talking about.
Sure. Weekend Live is like this movie's version of SNL, Saturday Night Live. And they're
glad you clarified for people who like, what does SNL stand for?
I don't know. It's some people, I don't know. No, anyway.
All those people listen to our podcast. I'm gonna have to check this SNL thing out. I've never heard of this before.
Listen, I'm trying to be a fucking professional. we technically went to journalism school.
Yeah, technically.
Some scouts from Weekend Live come to their improv show. Miles tells, I'm just going to use the actors' names. Yeah. Mike Birbiglia tells Keegan-Michael Key to not pull any showboaty shit. And that's exactly what he does.
They're like, no reason.
No.
Later on, he pulls showboaty shit when he's big. And in that situation, honestly, the saving grace for the audience, I'll give him that. because all they care about later in the movie is like him when he's at these shows. But like that was bombing so hard. I do not begrudge him for showboating there and making it about him, because that show was not going to survive. Earlier on this show, when he does showboat, however, the bit was doing fine.
Yeah. But that was the thing also, is he's selling out his friends in order to like get him higher status. The show goes well. He apologizes. Obviously, that's what you do. But then Weekend Live is interested in Gillian Anderson and Keegan-Michael Key to audition for their show. Chris Gethard's character is absent for the Weekend Live scout show. Also, the theater's closing down, so it's like the last month of the theater, essentially.
They don't have money.
Yes.
You could charge $15 a ticket. They charge like $5 a
they
ticket.
Do. You could charge $15, you absolutely. Charge,
I'd say, if I was going to pay, like, I'd pay $20.
For a professional level improv show?
Just at any theater. Like, if I'm saying, like, the amount of money I would spend, if someone's like, do you want to go to this improv show? And I have, like, no idea about it. I'm like, how much is it? And they're like, $20. I'd be like, okay.
Yeah.
That's about the level of like, you know, it might suck, but it's $20.
No, I agree. They're definitely charging too little.
Like way too little.
1,000%. Listen, I wish you could make money off art just inherently and not need to overcharge people. But
I too long for the return of feudalism and the patron.
Yes.
Thing. Like, the feudalism didn't do a lot of things correctly. You know, controversial take, feudalism bad. But, like, patronism was... And, like, we used to have it. Even when, like early capitalism, we had, like, patronism. Like you know, I don't like any capitalist, but, like, Andrew Carnegie, like, paid for artists and, like, built, like, 20... that random number, this is not accurate at all. Like, 20,000 libraries. The Cleveland Art Museum's free to go into because he gave them so much money that they've been able to just like live off of the fucking like memberships.
Yeah.
And no one does that anymore.
Especially not in America. I know like they have funds, but like, and I know in other countries that they have to like meet certain standards and get movies approved and the blah, blah, blah. But like they're publicly funded. I mean, in the same way that a lot of, like a lot of movies, it's like, when you run for a studio, you need like studio approval.
But it's like Bezos. Bezos hasn't done anything for culture. Musk does nothing for culture. Carnegie sure did many terrible things, but at least he's like, I'm going to build some fucking libraries.
Yeah, I would argue Musk has done less than nothing for culture by buying X and ruining.
I think the issue is we've moved too far past feudalism without addressing this as a society. Because when we were closer to feudalism, I'm going to butcher it. What is the noble obligé?
Sure. Yeah.
Obligé.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, like there's the idea that and like, nah, obviously not everyone did it, but there was the idea that like the nobility should provide and take care of the people below them.
Yes.
And that's like, when feudalism worked, on the rare occasions it worked really well. It worked really well on, like, the five occasions in history that there was a decent guy in charge. Because on the very rare occasion you have a man who thinks he's put on a throne by God and he truly cares for his subjects, works fantastically.
Yeah.
But we've moved too far past, and that's just kind of all in the past, and now they're like, it's all about me.
Yeah, I'm
going to invent the Cybertruck and give people superpowers.
Dude, instead of sending yourself to space, I would love if they were to fucking fund the arts.
I would also love if you just send yourself to space and didn't come back.
That's true. You know what? Fair. But I don't remember where we were on.
The scouts.
They charge too little. They charge too little. I agree. I wish I would definitely pay 15 to 20 a ticket without thinking about it.
Yeah.
I understand their thought process of, we don't want to rip off the whatever in case this thing bombs, but also like there's this integrity thing where it's like, I understand we need to make a little money, but like
$20 for a show is pretty much like, yeah, it's fucking $20 for a show.
Yeah. Like, I know when we shot both specials, or I mean, we shot two at the same time. But the 2 days that we did the specials, I know the first one in 2019, we charged, I want to say it was $15 a ticket. And then in last October, we charged $20 or $25. Like,
yeah, like also if you've been doing this for a while, you can charge $20. So I want to comment and applaud you and state my deep jealousy for this fucking fly, which has been bothering me for like a couple days now. It's driving me nuts. I just like landed on your head and you just kept talking without reacting. Yeah. And I wish I could do that. Like, I've been going apps. There's been moments, folks, recently where I've been, like, hunched up with just sheer anger, and the fly hits me, and I start screaming at it. I am so angry at this fucking fly. Go towards the trap!
Hopefully it goes to the trap
tonight. Harrison,
ball
the trap. Go towards the trap. You stupid fucking... Oh, God.
Bill misses the show. I don't remember what my point was with the ticket prices, other than they could charge more.
They could just charge
but
more.
We live in a capitalist hellscape. Yeah. The bulk of my point was we live in a capitalist hellscape, and I wish artists could make money without having to.
But also, you can charge people, $20, and that's not gouging. You're fine.
Especially if you're professionals.
Yeah, if you're a person who does this, like you've been doing this for years, and you have a theater you operate out of.
Yeah,
$20 is fine.
Yeah,
it's nothing.
After the first show, Chris Gethard has a conversation with his father, where his dad just bought a porno theater and is trying to flip it
into a Sephora.
Yes, I thought it was an Urban Outfitters, but that's what ends up replacing the original theater.
Also, like before you pass, because it's a very small line, but it made me hate so many of these fucking people.
Go.
Is when they were in the bar and they're talking about the fucking theater shutting down, and they're like, "New York is dead." I'm like, fuck off. Fuck off. New York is dead. Fuck off. There's other theaters. And there will continue to be other theaters. You guys open another theater.
I know. They're allowed to have a moment of melodrama.
I just hate people who are like, the New York's Cleveland scene's dead. No, it's not.
No, I 1,000% agree. If someone is continually like that, they're annoying and I don't want to hang out with them. If someone has a moment of melodrama, I get it. Like, it happens. God. We all have moments where we're not 100% our best. After the first show, Bill has a conversation with his dad who just bought a porno theater, and is trying to get his son into real estate. Chris Gethard, Bill, doesn't want to do real estate. He works at a job, giving away free samples at a supermarket.
Yeah.
I
feel like he could take the job running the Sephora and still do improv.
I agree. He wasn't at the Weekend Live Scout show because his father had been in a motorcycle accident.
Yeah. Hit with a semi.
And at the after party, Keegan-Michael Key gets a call that he and Gillian Anderson, I think I've been calling her Gillian this entire time. I think it's Gillian. Anyway, it's Jacobs, by the way. It's Gillian Jacobs. I'm fucking stupid. I may have gotten her name correct earlier.
I have no idea. She's the lady from Community.
She's been in so many other things.
That is as much as I... If you show me a picture, I'd say
she's
the community lady.
Yeah. She's Britta from Community. She's also in the Netflix show Love, which fucking rules. I love Love. Anyway. I hate the name of the show because...
I hated that fucking head waggle you did when you said that.
Gillian Anderson and Keegan-Michael Key, Weekend Live is interested in them for to audition. And so they walk into the room and Chris Gethard is just fucking crying about his dying dad. Yeah.
And they go, oh, it does have one of my...
Well, they don't. Just Keegan-Michael Key.
So it's like, oh, we got an interview. And it is one of the best line deliveries in the movie where he just goes, congrats, man.
I love it. Oh, my God.
And again, it would be such a perfect scene if you were supposed to hate the majority of these people.
No, I do think... I don't think you're supposed to hate
you're
any
not.
Of
I'm
them,
saying if you like, were, yeah. I would love this movie. Sure. If this whole movie was like flavored towards these people are insufferable and you should hate them, I'd buy it on Blu-ray. It'd be such a fun movie. I'd love to watch a movie about an improv group dealing with being jealous of a successful friend, and you're like, these people are bad and you should hate them.
They start talking about what they're going to do in the audition, because Bill needs the escape. He needs the distraction. Yeah. And Jack is just like so willing to talk about himself the entire time. But no, that that line, the congrats, man, it's the best. It's the best. I'm trying to, we'll probably get to it. That's top three in the movie, at least.
Oh, easily. Yeah. You know, that's such a perfect delivery of that line.
I've done a lot of behind the scenes research, of this movie, cause I actually really like this movie. Like,
it's one of us.
I really like this movie, and I like most or all of the people in of the main cast and the side characters. There are members in the 101 class are like a bunch of local, like at the time, New York town, like underground New York people. Like there's Connor Ratliff, Joe Firestone are like bit parts. Excuse me. Sure. I didn't expect you to know who they were. Thank you for over exaggerating nodding.
Which is perfect for this audio medium. Yeah, he's just like, there's just naming names and staring. I have like no knowledge of the comedy scene.
It's a very specific moment in underground New York improv and stand up. Anyway, so Chris Gethard is actually really crying in that scene, like real. He's actively thinking about what he would like, how he would react if his father died, and like was really being an act. Like,
yeah, you're describing acting.
Well, but also
in this
like,
scene, he was really getting the mindset of someone whose dad just died.
He was, but they showed the movie to Judd Apatow, and Judd was like complimenting everyone and was talking to Chris, and Chris was like, yeah, I went real method for this specific scene and blah blah blah, like I really got myself into the moment of what I would feel when my dad dies. And Judd just went, you know they make eye drops, right?
I love Judd. I love Judd.
So Jack and Sam have their audition. Sam is
doesn't show up.
I was gonna say, the word I was looking for was late.
Jesus Christ.
Okay. So Jack and Sam have their audition for Weekend Live.
Well, one of them has their audition.
Sure, but they're training for their audition at Weekend Live, and
like a Rocky montage almost.
It is. It actually, Liz, I like it. It's one of the few times where Jack is just inherently likable to me. I think it's because there's a phrase, you're only an underdog once. And I think like that scene specifically is like him truly
he was never likable to me. I don't know why she's in this relationship. I don't know what either of them's getting out of it.
Well,
that's fucking.
See, okay. I think it's one of those, there was something in the beginning, and they have since just grown apart. Like, both naturally, just because as they've gotten older, they've started changing, and Jack wants to move on to a different thing while Sam wants to stay with Improv for America. Is it Improv for America or Improv of America?
The wrong person.
Okay, anyway.
Absorbed this movie while just in a deep state of pain.
She wants to stay with the commune. Like, there's that where Jack wants to move on to something and she wants to stay. But also, like, I think they got together when they were like 20s, and now they're in their 30s and are just different people.
Yeah.
But aren't super willing to admit they're different people. And also, like, there's like, I can't tell if Sam loves Jack or loves the commune or the idea of the commune and improv more. Like, Again, I think in the beginning of their relationship when they were in their 20s, it was one and the same thing. And because he was like the best of the best of the group and she was attracted to that. And then he like lost the spark for the group and whether and she is confronted with the fact, does she still love him? I can't tell if she at this point in the movie loves Jack or loves who Jack was. And then or like the idea of a person.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a thought process.
Imagine being in a point of your life where you're like, my relationship's not working. I met another person. It's called low tier improv.
Yeah, they got together. I think they got together when they were both like
horny 20-year-olds.
Yeah, and then now they're in their 30s and they're just like at different points in life. I don't think there's anything wrong with either of them. But Jack goes to his audition, crushes it. Also, Pete Holmes has a cameo as the guy on the cell phone who crushes his audition, doesn't get it, but crushes his audition in the lobby. And I love that on the sign-up sheet, his character's name is Peter Holmes.
I don't know who Peter Holmes is.
Which is just...
As a cameo?
Yeah. The guy on the...
I know that guy. Who is he? He's Peter Holmes.
He's a stand-up comedian. He has the You Minute Weird podcast. He has a couple HBO specials, a Netflix special. He's a stand-up comedian.
Sometimes I forget like how much I don't know about comedy. Like how like I know nothing of that scene. No,
that's fair. I just love that his character's name is Peter Holmes, which is like the man's real name in real life. But I read it and I'm like, that's not his name's Pete. Like that's Pete Holmes. I'm not pretending to know him, but like when someone has a persona of a shortened version and then you hear the longer or read the longer version of their name, it's like, that's not your name. Like Peter Holmes sounds like an investment banker.
Peter Holmes sounds like a businessman in like 18th century Victorian England, which may not be 18th century. Don't hold me to that. Who like was pretty successful, like invented the cotton gin too, and like had a wife who was 20 years younger than him.
Yeah, Pete sounds like a silly, goofy guy.
Yeah, Pete Holmes sounds like a fun guy. He doesn't sound like his wife's of a reasonable age.
But Sam doesn't. She gets her name tag, goes through the hallway to start her like to go to her audition, and then decides to turn back because she. At first, you think it's because she's afraid of failing at it, but we later learn it's because like she loves the commune so much and she doesn't want to leave the commune.
Yeah.
Jack gets on Weekend Live. And the group is in the bar scene where he's telling everyone, the group is like in initial shock. And that scene is acted so well. Everyone is like hiding jealousy, but not at all hiding jealousy.
It truly speaks to like all the people I know who and have known who are like this, which is like they're friends, but it is such a weak friendship.
Dude.
That the friendship shatters at any real conflict mm-hmm. point about things that they think are important, which is like film in the cases I know, or like improv comedy here. Like as soon as it impacts their image of themselves, that friendship does not survive that.
Dude, I know people on SNL, but like I didn't know, I wasn't like deep friends with them, but when they were in the Cleveland scene, but like I know people who were deep friends with them, and I've been to shows with them where there is like a noted jealousy, but also just in my personal life, like when you see friends that you started with are now like going into higher, like they're starting to feature and they're starting to headline when you're like still hosting. I've definitely experienced that firsthand of like, I'm incredibly happy for you. And like 100%, like all of me is happy for you, but also I cannot deny that there is an internal jealousy of not that I'm angry that you got it, but angry that I want it also.
I'm not a very jealous person. I have many flaws, but a jealousy is not chief amongst them. So whenever I see things like this, I'm just like, grow the fuck up. And I understand that, like, it's probably a natural reaction to have, but yeah. I'm just not a man who's prone to jealousy.
I think it's what you do with it. Like, I think most of the people handle this pretty well, where actually Bill and Data.
I also don't have a lot of peers. I've not been great at creating peer groups traditionally.
Sure.
I've been actively disruptive to peer groups, but like, I guess I've never been in a situation where someone that I'm like, this is a peer of mine is doing better than me.
I think jealousy is, when used as it's a good marker. Too much Dr. Actually, never enough Dr. Pepper.
Never enough. Send us some. Send us money in Dr. Pepper, Mr. Pepper. Never enough. No, I'm quicker to anger. I think I'd be angrier. I'd be angry over jealousy.
I think I'm quicker to jealousy, but I am not quicker to, like, lash out because of it. I think jealousy is a good internal marker of, like, oh, that is a thing you want. Now, what steps do we need to take so that you can have it also? Like, I try not to. I'm sure I'm a human. Like, I'm a human. But, like, I'm sure I'm human. I have done this before in my life. I don't try to wallow in, like, jealousy. I use it as, like, a tool to push me.
All these people do is wallow in their fucking jealousy.
I think Bill and Data they get together and they form the writing team. I think they use it well. I think Miles pretends to use it well, but also has a deep-seated, like, inability to hide it. Oh my god, I forget Tammy Sager's character name. But she ends up getting the Weekend Live writing job. Spoilers. honestly, we should stop prefacing spoilers for a podcast where we explicitly talk about a movie.
No, I think it's important we keep dueling it.
I don't know. I think everyone uses it. It's just, I think Miles wallows in it the most. And turns it into outward anger as opposed to inward
development.
Yeah. Yeah. So they visit. I can't remember when this it happens relatively early. They visit Bill's dad in the hospital. He's like awake but half in a coma That sounded very dismissive.
Blah, blah, blah. Yada, yada. Your dad's dying.
He's essentially like awake he's like awake but in a coma and passing in and out of consciousness. He whispers thank you, and on the car ride home they all mock it.
They make it do a fucking bit. Just wild.
I think, yeah. Listen, I would probably find that insufferable.
This is obviously a situation I could never imagine myself in. But if my dad was like dying and someone did a bit about it, I would hit them.
Yeah.
I would hit them. I would physically assault them.
I think, yeah. I think it would depend on the person. Listen, they're all like, their friendship is so faltery.
If it's a long-term person I knew, I would just bring up something they don't want me to talk about. I would attack them at their weakest spot. I'd be like, hey, shut the fuck up, Joe. Fucking small dick piece of shit. You know, your girlfriend told me you can't please her or something like that. You know,
I think it would depend on how well I knew the person and like if like they were specifically trying to joke to cheer me up or if they were trying to joke to be an asshole.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not a in serious situations. I am a let's be serious for a little while. I'm not an always on joke person.
And even I would be like, I'm not gonna mock how his dad's talking.
Sure,
I might try to make a joke because that's the only way I know how to process my emotions.
Yeah,
but like, it's gonna be like you said. It's gonna be trying to make them laugh. It's not gonna be at their expense.
Sure, different people have different senses of humor. Yeah. I think that's what truly this breaks down to is that you and I don't like people mocking our dying dad.
Yeah, I think it boils down to that our sense of humor is not that of a collective of insufferable improv artists.
Yeah, that's fair.
And that's what it boils down to, why I don't like these people. Because it's like, improv's my life, improv's my personality. You don't have to make it a bit. You can make a joke and not have it be a whole bit about his dying dad. You can just make jokes unrelated to the prompt that you're given.
Yeah.
You can make a separate joke to try to make him laugh. You're like, oh, his dad's dying. That's my prompt. Sicko behavior.
Yeah. And I don't know. I think if his dad had been dead for years and you make it, first off, if you're going to make a dead parent joke or a dying parent joke, you better be sure it's a fucking 10 out of 10. It better be a goddamn home run. Don't give me no fucking base hits. Okay. But like, say his dad had been dead 4 years, an opportunity for a joke comes up, you are best friends with this person, and then you make a 10 out of 10 joke, and both of you in this situation are laughing, that's chill.
Or you gotta, they kept going, you have to disengage if it's that song like that. Like, yeah, I've made jokes about someone's parents before, and they're like, actually, my mom's dead. And so like, I have to disengage from that. So I go, oh, I didn't know you were an orphan, and I just walk away.
So that's almost...
And I'm still friends with them. So I think it's working.
That's, you know what? You know what? Different strokes for different folks.
But it's like, at this point, I can't recover. There's no way I'm going to be able to recover from this.
No, that's fair.
So I just finish it off bad and move on. But they don't. They keep hammering it home. Because he said, like, thank you. Because he was like, could barely say words. They just kept going, thank you. He's like, it's not really funny. They're like, thank you. They just keep making fun of it. They keep hammering it home. So if the show is flopping, change course.
Listen.
This is like if you told a bad stand-up joke and they didn't laugh. And you said, hang on. And then you just kept retelling it. He's like, you don't understand. You're like, I'm going to explain. And like, that wasn't the joke itself.
No, I have done that as the joke. Yeah. I have also been in incredibly bad shows where everyone is bombing. I know I'm about to bomb, and so I'm going to make this fun for me.
Yeah. They thought they were doing good.
Yeah. I don't know. I think, yeah, I guess it just comes down to like different folks have different sense of humors, have different whatever.
Some of them are bad.
If the person who you are joking about or attempting to joke to cheer them up is laughing, then like whatever.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna blame you, but it is weird and it's not a thing I enjoy. I'm also not like I've done roast battles, but I'm not really a roast my friends like type of joke person.
I love that term.
Roast battle?
Roast battle.
Yeah.
I've always loved that term.
Oh, okay. I was like,
you're like,
know?
Geneva, I'm going off to roast war. You're a big old kid. So you're like, take care of our child, our boy for me. And you're like settling. You're off to war. The horns are blowing. It's like a fucking medieval. That's what I always picture. It's like, and you're like, boom, boom, boom. And you're like, you're there polishing your sharpest barb at someone.
Instead, it's just a bunch of people in a basement who have spent the last month writing the most vicious jokes ever.
Yeah.
But there's like a time and place for that. I'm not a...
I don't know why rap battle doesn't get that same response out of me. But roast battle is like, I'm off to war.
Yeah. I'm not a let's roast friends 24/7 person, like a type of comedian.
I am. That's
sure.
Not a comedian. I don't do that as a comedy bit. But that is how my group tends to operate. It's just constant.
I'm very much I have the space, I have the time, I have the location to like let out the like whatever energy I need to let out. But then like off stage, I try and
person. We were playing D&D last night and just the slightest references to something came up and we started roasting Brandon actually.
Sure.
And then he's like, fuck you guys. And then we started roasting Cameron. But then Brandon's like, you know what? I apologize for yelling at you. It's very funny. Actually watching it from the outside, this is the right thing to do. he's like, I know I was upset in the moment, but it turns out relentlessly hounding someone for a mistake they made running a game is hilarious.
So I don't really remember what happens, the order in which things happen in this movie.
Yeah, it's a meandering. It's very much like in an anime term, I believe it'd be like slice of life.
Yeah. So I guess let's just break down each individual character stories and just like
their little arcs. Yeah.
Yeah. Their little arcs. Bill is dealing with his dead father, and he and Kate Micucci are a writing team, working on a writing packet for Weekend Live.
Yeah.
That's the bulk of their arcs.
There's not too much things to go off of here because it's honestly just a normal, healthy thing they're doing. They're not. They're just doing it, and they do it, and they fail, and they're bummed, but that's about it.
Kate Micucci's arc, outside of the writing team and within it, but is she's writing a graphic novel, essentially about being a burned-out gifted kid.
Yeah.
I think it's called Best Girl in Town or something like that. But she's been writing this graphic novel for a decade, and she's terrified of finishing it, and she's terrified of like doing the writing packet because she doesn't think she's good enough. Or that she peaked at 16, essentially. Yeah. She's terrified that she peaked in high school. And that when she releases something as an adult, it's going to be bad. And all of the praise that the gifted version of her got is going to...
Yeah, because she won like an award in high school or something for comics.
Yeah.
Cartoons. And then Bill just kind of lives his life outside of that.
Yeah.
His dad dies. He's sad. But, you know, he's fine.
Yeah, he does the writing packet. I think Kate Micucci, on a personal level, has the most relatable journey to me on, like one-to-one, like, comparison. I don't know. I performed very... This is not a brag. This is just a fact. I performed very highly in academics as a youth. And now that I don't have that structure... I feel like I'm floundering and nothing I'm doing is good enough.
Like, I think that's also why we're having different takes on this movie, because there's bits of it which apply to us personally, but we just handled with this, we just handled these situations completely differently, so it's hitting us different. Like, this is a fact and a brag. I got a 32 on like my ACT scores, like the gift I got, like free scholarships everywhere. I went to Kent because they had fish and chips and I liked the campus, and they got rid of the fish and chips. Still angry about that. But it worked out. But like as like a burnt out gifted kid, I'm just like, that's what I am. I think a lot of my inability to connect with this movie is that when I was placed in similar situations, I just went, okay.
Yeah, here I am.
Okay.
I fought against it. And I still fight against it. Like
I'm so like when faced with adversity, I'm not saying that I don't work to overcome it, but like my emotional state is I move very rapidly to acceptance.
I don't think that I'm going after the praise that I received in high school and college and like as a younger person, but it's not the drive, but I think it's like I want the structure that I had then, and I'm constantly trying to build that. And I don't know who I am outside of that structure, but also like, I guess energy is the right word. Like I have the drive,
yeah.
But it's just like working full time, doing stand up.
Yeah, it's the struggle with adulthood.
Yes. I constantly feel like I'm burned out in a way that I have not felt.
I think that ties into me too, because like I'm very much in the moment, which is to my detriment too. I have like no future. I rarely ever have a future plan. I'm just kind of on like if everyone else is a boat, I'm on like a lazy river.
Yeah,
I'm just going where it takes me. But like it does save me a lot of like strife. I see other people in my situations have, because I'm truly like, well, that's what's happening now. Yeah,
that's fair. At the end of the movie, she does finish her graphic novel and mails it for submission. Is it like submission for publication?
I believe so.
Okay.
What else would she be mailing it?
I didn't know if she like had a contract or was like free submitting it. Like, because they mentioned that they were at the end, they were going to throw a show for the release of the book.
Well, then she might have a contract for it then.
Yeah. But I also think 10 years for a contract is...
Yeah, it can't be. Probably a recent contract. She probably sent some stuff recently.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's no way she'd have that contract if it took her 10 years.
Right? She would owe them thousands.
Thousands of dollars.
But that's the bulk of her individual arc. they're Tammy Sager is kind of just dealing with Arrested Development, also secretly is writing a packet for Weekend Update, but is basically just dealing with Arrested Development, living with her parents, collecting unemployment, despite being the richest out of all of them, which is a thing that's brought up.
Yeah, many times. It's how she's, her therapist tells her the rich have it hard too.
Yeah. I think she's too embarrassed to admit that she would have failed. And so she does it all in secret. I think it's that, yeah, she, did we mention her? It's because she grew up in a privileged life. She wants to have earned.
I pushed back hard against that idea as a concept.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. But yeah, she wants to have felt like she earned the thing. And so she didn't tell anyone in case she did not get it.
Yeah.
But Miles' arc is essentially out of, growing up.
Yeah, not fucking 20-year-old improv student.
Instead, fucking your 36-year-old former high school classmate.
Yeah.
Not
the greatest choice. Sorry, fucking your 36-year-old college class or high school classmate is also carrying to term the child of a much younger Brazilian life coach whose language you didn't speak that she fucked in Brazil.
On a silent retreat. But Miles, they get together, they fall in love. Miles learns to love someone other than himself. And he... essentially is going to become a father.
And he's
going to
move out of his terrible fucking
loft.
It's a sad, that's a sad place for a 36-year-old man to be living.
Yeah.
Anyone over the age of 25 should not be living where they have to climb to their bed. I'm not saying that as like a lifestyle choice thing. I'm saying that's just like, that's like a rule of nature. It's like your body's decaying. You should not be on like the top of a bunk bed. This is not, that is not your game anymore, kid.
That's fair. Miles is also dealing with the jealousy of he has a couple friends who have gone on to the show and he taught Jack. And so he thinks that
he got turned down at an
audition. Yes. In, I want to say specifically they mentioned like 03.
Yeah.
He was best friends with one of the already existing castmates. And then re-sees him at a bar and finds out that castmate is getting married. Turns out they weren't as close as he thought they once were.
Yeah.
But he has been in the trenches for so long and he has taught these people that he feels like, I mean, he does feel entitled to a level of
success. Oh, he's the most entitled person there.
Yeah, he does feel entitled to a level of success.
He believes with every fiber of his being that he should be on that show.
Yeah. Miles' arc is growing out of that, but there is resistance to that. Like when he's submitting his writing packet to Jack and essentially is just lashing out Jack is being a bit of a pompous ass and then Miles is like being an entitled jealous bitch.
Yeah, just an entitled piece of shit. Come on, you're a teacher who's taught some of the greatest improv people. That's a title in its own worth.
Yeah. There's a line Jack says that I love, and I feel like if I hadn't gotten it, I would have just killed myself. And then Chris Gethard's Bill goes, "Oh, you mean if you had to keep living the rest of our lives?"
Yeah.
I love that, just that interaction so much. I think it perfectly sums up, I think it sums up both of those characters, but it also like it shows Jack as it's a perfect encapsulation of Jack as a person, but also like how he views the rest of the group. That was a complete tangent.
Yeah, he's a piece of shit.
Yeah. He's a pompous ass. But also like when he's chill, he's chill. When he's emotionally vulnerable, he's like kind of okay, except for one scene that we'll get to.
I don't want to get to that scene. You made me sit through it.
I know. So that is that the bulk of Miles's arc?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's it's literally like sad sack of shit becomes slightly less sad sack of shit and raises another man's son.
And then it's a man who should have been a grown up by now becoming a grown up.
Yeah.
Miles also quits doing improv and gives his 101 his class to Sam, who has now like a new outside of the commune, has a new purpose. And that's essentially her arc, is not getting the show, not even wanting to do the show, being fully in love with the commune, but then later find you're just fully in love with like,
I think I would, I'd fall sickly in love with end of movie Sam.
Yeah.
Like unhealthily.
Yeah. 1,000
end of movie percent. Sam, yeah, she would destroy me.
Listen, if I were not a taken man, absolutely. As a taken man, as a regardless, I would want to be like lifelong best friends with the Sam archetype. Like, she just has a personality of a person that I would totally vibe with. That's the bulk of her arc, is like discovering.
Yeah, and she breaks up with Jack in like the worst fucking way.
Oh my God. Are we going to get to
it? We're going to talk about this right now so we can get it out of the fucking
way. And then we're going to move on to Jack's arc. Yeah. Okay. So there's this scene. It's the one truly.
I tried to leave to take a smoke break and Harrison wouldn't let.
Because
he said, oh, it's going to get worse. And I tried to leave.
So she's alone on stage at a commune show.
Oh, because we should probably talk about this after the Jack scene.
So essentially, Jack is getting too big for his britches, but also like is trying to help everyone out, but everyone's jealous.
And he can't. He just fucking can't. They're like, oh, you're in the industry now. You can get us in. It's like the industry doesn't work like that. He has to push it through so many people who don't give a shit about his funny friends, as they repeatedly tell him. No one gives a shit about your funny friends.
But,
if we wanted your funny friends, we would have got them.
Sure. Jack is becoming too big for his britches. He's not showing up to the improv shows because he has a job.
Yeah. but a big also, point of contention is at some points, oh, I have an actual job now.
Yeah. But then when he does show up to the shows, all audiences want to do is have him play characters that he does on the show. He has essentially advanced past the group.
Yeah, he's out of their weight class.
And he and his girlfriend Sam are in the process of breaking up, but neither of them want to admit that they're growing apart and breaking up. It all culminates in they're watching Weekend Live, and Jack has stolen essentially one of his sketches is a note for note, beat for beat version of a improv thing that they did at a show at the beginning of the movie. And so the group goes to the,
and I will say incredibly shitty move, but in his defense,
oh yeah,
the majority of that sketch he did do. Like, if you look at it earlier in the scene, he plays the initial character.
Yeah.
He creates the orphans.
Yeah.
That's the entire sketch.
Yeah.
A shitty move, but they're like, he's stealing everything we did. It's like, I mean, it's shitty, and he's taking something that he probably should have talked to you about. You guys didn't put in as much work as him. It's that weird sense of entitlement they all have, where they're like, oh, it's all part of, it's like, we rewrote it for a large part.
Sure. It all culminates, they're at the after party for the episode, and Chris Gethard, Kate Micucci, and Mike Birbiglia are gonna go confront him. It ends up Miles, Mike Birbiglia, just like sets apart on his own, pulls Keegan-Michael Key aside, confronts him like, yo, you fucking stole our sketch. And then Keegan-Michael Key is like, you don't know how much pressure I'm under, which is probably true. Like,
yeah,
the amount of crunch that they're under.
Yeah, this is like the one thing everyone knows about SNL is that they're under an insane amount of pressure, because they have to turn out, I mean, I'm not going to say good bits because a lot of them suck, but they have to turn out like bits that the people will approve every week.
Yeah. Miles ends up in another one of, in my opinion, a top three line delivery is he's angry, he punches Keegan-Michael Key, and then as soon as his fist connects, he realized what he did and was like, oh, are you okay?
Yeah, and then he gets dragged out by a fucking bouncer because holy shit.
And yeah, Chris Gethard and Kate Micucci are pissed at him because that wasn't the plan. And
he's pissed at what's her name because she didn't go in, but that's because she's like, I want to embarrass myself in front of coworkers. And they're like, what does that mean? She's like, I got the job, and they're pissed at that.
Well, yeah, because she has no work ethic and everything has been handed to her. Yeah,
they all start like attacking each other real personally.
Yeah. And then, yeah, she goes after Kate Micucci for not finishing the graphic novel, causes her to cry and walk away, and then Bill's like, that's not fucking cool, dude.
Even Bill is like just personally attacking people at this point.
Yeah.
The only person who doesn't is Sam.
Yeah. Bill mentions that she's not gonna last because she doesn't have work ethic.
Yeah.
Which, yes, is a personal attack, but it was also like true. And yes, is a thing he said in anger that he probably shouldn't. He said it
as a personal attack.
Yeah, he shouldn't have said it. But like, it's not like and I'm not justifying whatever, he shouldn't have said it, but it's not like Miles being like, everything has been fucking handed to you and you're collecting unemployment. Yeah. And like Miles was definitely
for her attacking Kate.
Yeah. But yeah, that's the big culmination scene. And then essentially the next scene that directly follows is Sam alone at the commune show, and she pretends.
Yes, their line that they always ask is like, who's had a hard day? Because they'll like do a bit based off of that. And someone says, you did.
Yeah. She's like, you know,
she dragged
you're right.
All their chairs away.
Yeah, you're right. And she pretends to be trapped in a well, but that she's going to be okay. And
yeah, I'll be completely honest with everyone here. Largely was aggressively zoning out. Like, zoning out sounds like a passive activity. I made it a sport.
No.
I was forcing myself to not pay attention.
I like the scene.
Oh, it's so bad.
I like this part of the scene. I think it's melodramatic, but I think like the care. It's
imagine you're in that audience.
Yeah, 1,000%. I've been in that audience.
Awful. I would walk out.
No. I love a good train wreck.
If someone started doing that, I would walk out.
No, love a good train wreck of a show, dude. I've been to absolute dumpster fires of sets, where they essentially turn into therapy session, dude. I went to one show where a dude brought on his guitar, didn't play guitar, and just ranted about Fight Club for like 15 minutes.
See, but that's. I feel like that's just a crazy bad show. This is like someone having like an emotional therapy session. Like I saw a show. It was stand up at Eurogyro, and some guy was doing a bit about like how racist Republicans are, but he kept saying the N-word. He was white.
Okay.
But yeah, they hate this. He's like, oh, you know, they're always like, oh, fuck those sand. And they just kept just doing that. And we're like, the place was like dead silent. And I'm like, why is no one taking him off stage? And we're just like there and we're like, we turned to my friend Bruce, who's like one of two black people in this building at the moment. And we're like, you want to go? Because I want to go. And he's like, yeah, I want to go. And like, so we stood up with our pizza, and then like some people saw us stand up, then everyone else started standing up and leaving because it was bad, man. Yeah. This white guy just screaming the N-word at us.
Dude, no, I have had sets. I've probably had sets that I turned them more into therapy sessions than they should have been, especially in the early days. Not so much now. I'm
pretty
good at
whatever.
Yeah,
but you can make it funny.
Like,
then this is just... It's not even like a joke. She's just setting up an improv bit and then doing therapy in it. She's not bidding.
I have seen that, though. I've seen shows. No, I mean, yes.
Awful.
But there's also something
whatever
to be said.
Whatever happened to vaudeville canes? Whatever happened to the big old hoops to drag, the big old canes to drag people off stages? We need to bring that back.
Sure. I have definitely seen shows that have been that, especially specific sets.
And if I was at these shows, I'd produce my orally sized cane, and I would drag them off the stage.
Nah,
get off the stage.
I'm willing to let y'all go pretty far. But Keegan-Michael Key shows up and gets on stage.
And she's like, oh, my boyfriend isn't here. And it's like, I am here.
And he's desperately trying to pull her out of the well, the pretend well. And she's like, I'm happy in the well. And he's like, I'm not going to leave you behind. And she's like, fucking let me. And they break up on stage. And that's the part I hate. Like, that to me is far too melodramatic. Even for me.
And the biggest issue is they don't show all the media coverage that would have come out about this. Would have been everywhere.
Yeah.
People were at the show. Fucking, it's like a fucking, like, Norm MacDonald in, like, fucking Weekly Update era had a really melodramatic breakup on stage. Everyone would have known.
Yeah. No, yeah, I mean, but I don't like, it's the one scene in this movie I don't like. Like, wholesale don't
I
like.
I can't say that, it is, but it is indeed the worst of them.
Sure.
It is so uncomfortable.
My favorite scene in this movie is when they're clearing out the theater. Oh, the general arc is that the theater is closing and the group is trying to find a new space while they're also dealing with the internal jealousies of the group. Let's just go through Jack's arc and then the general arc real quick. Jack's arc is he gets the show and is trying to deal with his friend, like getting his friends on the show, but also like trying to survive his first year on the show and adjusting the personal and professional and juggling the personal and professional life. That's the bulk of his arc. Keegan-Michael Key plays it really well, that even though Jack is, I don't want to say he's a slime ball. He's a very selfishly motivated person. He's still, there's a certain charm to him. Is there any specific things we want to talk about with Jack's arc? You want to talk about?
We just went over it. We just like went over his arc.
Okay.
Didn't we?
Well, yeah. Did we? I know we went over Sam's and then...
We went over the fight. I mean, yeah, that's about all there is. I thought we already covered it, so obviously, I mean, there's not that much to it.
No. And then the general arc is they're trying to save the theater, realize they can't save the theater, and they're now trying to find a new performance space. My favorite... let's start trying to like wrap this in. My favorite scene in this movie is when they're cleaning out the theater and like are packing stuff and throwing stuff away. And they're all just like reminiscing. And Chris Gethard has what is my favorite line in the entire movie is, I feel like your 20s are all about hope. And then your 30s are about realizing how dumb it was for you to have hope.
My favorite scene, credits.
Yeah.
It's the epilogue, honestly. Not just because it's the ending of the movie, but because it's...
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, they go to the funeral.
Bill's dad's funeral.
What's his name? The guy that fucks young women.
Miles.
Is now in like a relationship with the woman his age, and they have the kid. And Jack's at a point in his career where when someone's like, hey, you're going to be late, he says, it's not going to go to dress. Shut the fuck up. I'll be there.
Yeah.
Like, because like the whole, and maybe just the way I interact with people, but the whole time he's always like, oh, yes, sorry.
Yeah,
he's like, he's really apologetic and like frightful of being there. But now he's at a place where he owns the space. And they're going to go see the new theater that they got. And that it was an old place that what's his name's dad got.
Yeah, it was an old porno theater that he was going to flip into a Sephora. But now that the dad is dead, they're going to turn into the improv theater.
Yeah, yeah. And they're going to go there. And he's like at a point where he's like, he goes to go into the car to get to the train to get to the show. And he's like, I mean, I can come see the theater. And they're like, no, you got to go. You're already late. And him and what's her name hug. And he leaves. And it's just a nice wrap up. And then it's terrible. They go into the improv theater and they're like, oh, it's going great. They start doing terrible improv games. And that part I didn't like. But that's my favorite.
See, I like that.
Maybe when she climbs on the table. I think that's where a younger me would have fallen in love with her.
Current Matthew, 1,000%.
A younger me, if she crawled on the table at me and shouted protest at me, I'd be head over heels.
Sure. She would terrify me. I don't know if I would fall in love.
Well, that's why I would fall for her. Sure. She terrifies me.
I don't know if I would fall in love, but I would definitely be like, this is a person.
As a Catholic, I associate fear with love.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, that's why like I could ever be with a God-loving woman, because I'm a God-fearing man.
But yeah, that's the scene where I fell in love with Sam as a character, but if Sam were a real person, I'd be like, you're super cool, I want to know you, but you terrify me.
Yeah, I there's nothing hotter in a woman than a deep, deep terrifying mental illness, in my opinion.
Okay.
You guess I'd have been more supportive.
Sorry, redo the line.
Yes. Yeah, okay. And keep this in. There's nothing hotter than like a woman with a deep seated mental illness who's terrifying.
So, okay. So do you mean like.
You're supposed to be supportive, not questioning.
I am. I'm yes, okay, and
okay,
you, right?
Okay.
Redo it.
Okay. There's nothing hotter in a woman than a mental illness, which is terrifying.
Honestly, that's fair.
Keep these all in. You can't help yourself. You're always like, okay, buddy.
No, what do you want me to say?
Yeah!
Okay, I'm happy for you.
Oh, God.
Okay, one more time.
There's nothing hotter in a... There's nothing hotter in a woman than, like, a deep-seated mental illness, which is kind of terrifying.
Soft degree. But, like...
Folks, we've done this four times. I keep saying, be more supportive. And every time he's like, what do you want from me? He does, he goes, okay.
Well, I'm trying to add on.
Lie! Just lie and be like, yeah! Whatever, the
I'm
movie...
I'm happy for you. Do you want me to just be like, I'm happy for you?
Yeah, that's okay, a good response. Go. We're not redoing it.
Please, one more time.
There's nothing hotter in a woman than like a deep-seated mental illness, which is like also terrifying.
Yeah, dude. No, I agree with that. I'm... Listen, are we talking mental illness in like...
The whole spectrum, baby.
The whole spectrum?
The whole spectrum, baby. Okay.
You know what? Fair. I don't want to speak too much about my predilections just because I'm currently seeing a person and my mother listens to this podcast, but I'm pretty sure I've stated before that there's nothing hotter than a woman who could kill me and chooses not to.
She's deeply schizophrenic. Geneva's deeply schizophrenic and sees everyone as an enemy.
She's not... Yeah, okay.
Like Harrison, you can't see because it's an audio thing, but there is like the full SWAT riot gear he arrived in, which he will have to put on when returning home, because she will, much like Hobbs of Calvin and Hobbes, attack him with not teeth, but knives as soon as he enters his house. Until he goes, no, Neve, it's me, I'm on one of the enemies.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
She's always trying to stab me. Yeah.
You could try being nice to
her. I'm a weasel. I'm incredibly nice to her. I'm very fond of Neve.
Yeah, me too, obviously.
She just happens to be a violent, short, angry... She's like Wolverine. She's like fucking Wolverine. She's a short, angry person who will call you bubs and stab you with a knife. Tell me I'm wrong.
You're not wrong.
I'm not wrong. Yeah, so this movie, I'd give it...
Okay, final thoughts, I guess.
If it was Rotten Tomatoes, I think we're talking about this. I'd give it like a 40.
Because
a 50 is like something that I've seen, I don't hate or don't like. Probably like a modern day Marvel movie. I'm not going to dislike it. I'm not going to like it. I'm going to forget about it. It's a movie I'm going to forget about. Where this is just reminds me of enough of the people I hate that I'm not going to forget about it. So that's going to bring it down to like a 40. It's not like terrible. It's a well made movie. I'm not saying like it's actually worth this 40%. That is truly my opinion. I think for other people, it should score higher.
Yeah.
But I just truly hate the kind of people it's showing me.
It's a gentleman six, but it's the best gentleman six I've ever seen. I can't, in good conscience, give it like crazy high, but I also don't, other than the one scene, don't really dislike a lot of this movie. It's tightly made. It's not incredibly flashy, but like it's everything's very workmanlike. I just think it's well executed. I think everyone acts well. I think it's a little plotty, but like I feel like this would be like I think I heard someone say this would be a great like 10 episode miniseries. I think a good Netflix 6 to 8. This would be a better series than it is a movie. I think there's just like too much. It suffers from like too much plot going on that I feel like if you could stretch it out.
And a miniseries would serve it better, and we would never have to watch it for this podcast.
That's fair. You honestly like this movie more than I thought you would. I
think that's because I was disassociating. I was actively pulling away from it. I think if I engage with this movie more, I would hate it more. But I was actively pulling away from it at points that would have truly made me upset.
That's fair. Yeah, I recommend it. I think everyone who is trying to be an artist full time should watch this movie.
I think everyone who is trying to be an artist full time should just kind of have a little moment with themselves where they set realistic expectations and not watch this movie.
Okay. Well, I think you also should set realistic expectations. However, I think you should watch this movie.
I don't think this is necessary viewing for anyone.
Okay. But no. Do you want to do socials?
Yeah, I'll do socials. Yeah, so you can find us on Instagram at Two Men Movie Podcast. You can also email us if you want to send us something. Whatever. I won't judge. TwoMenMoviePodcast@gmail.com. You can find me at Midwest_Magician. On Instagram, I don't post too much there, really. I don't post much on any social media, but yeah. And you can find Harrison at a new Instagram. It's not new. He's been saying it for a while. I've just been used to his like. For the longest time, Harrison's Instagram handle was like the kind of thing that like your grandmother would make her Gmail.
My Instagram handle. I'm TikTok on TikTok and Instagram both as harrisonpoole.com, POOLE, but all spelled out harrisonpoole.com. Yeah, thank you to Tristan Hostetter for our theme song. You already know where you can follow us. Thank you for listening.
And I love all of you. If any of you want to zip zap zap, I'll zip zap zap with you. Zip zap all
right, I'm stopping recording. I love you.
Love you too. Kisses.
This is Matthew and Harrison's Two Men in a Movie. It's not what it sounds like.